fact of life is that we have to eat every day to stay alive, of course, but there's a whole lot more to food than just surviving, living. It can be a joy to prepare. It's a pleasure to share, certainly, and really a tie to our family, our community, and our heritage as well. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. We are going to be talking about food today, and we're going to have a lot of fun talking about it and hearing about food and how it fits into our culture. Two great guests for you. Marion Grunes is the executive director of REAP Food Group. And Miriam, it's always a pleasure to have you with us. Thank you for coming by.
Thank you, Larry. Nice to see you again.
Yeah, great to see you. And Karen Dunn, with us as well, is the Information Services Librarian at Steenbach Library at the UW-Madison, which houses an incredible collection of cookbooks. And Karen, pleasure to have you with us.
Yes, thank you. I'm happy to be here.
We have... We're going to have a fun time talking about food and talking about the collection. There's some great events that are coming up starting tomorrow that you're going to have a chance to get involved with. So stay tuned for that. Maybe you have a community or a family cookbook that's a treasure to you. We'd love to hear about that. We'd also wonder if you have an interest in culinary history. What about it is particularly interesting to you and your family and in your community? Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on my Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question, comment, or maybe you've got a great food photo you want to send to us. Do that, too. At the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. Karen, cookbook collection. Tell us about the cookbook collection at Steenbach Library.
Well, I have to admit, it's long been a passion and a love of many of us on staff. Mm-hmm. And back in 1965, Madison resident and lawyer, retired lawyer, Mortimer Lavitan donated 2,615 cookbooks to the UW-Madison libraries.
Wow. And so it all wound up at Steenbach.
Right. When the Steenbach building was completed, that collection was moved into our facility, in part given interest for those departments such as the College of Agricultural and Life Sciences, School of Human Ecology. In addition to his donation, we continued to receive substantial donations from other area residents, other families who also donated in memory of many of their loved ones. And we also had a staff member from campus, Rita McCutcheon, who continued to donate cookbooks to us until her passing in 2007. So all told, we have nearly 5,000 plus cookbooks that are part of our collections.
Wow. Are they organized in some fashion, as in community cookbooks or church cookbooks?
Not per se, although we do have those represented in our collection. We have them actually filed in our stacks on the main book collection of our library, and they're shelved there in a continuum with collections for food science and technology, food preservation, nutrition research as well. So there's a bit of a continuum. They're right there, very accessible in our stacks. So in addition to our stacks, we also have vertical files as well that have many of those smaller press publications, some of those community cookbooks there as well. So in addition mm-hmm. to the vertical files, we do have what we have in the stacks.
And what can we learn? What can we learn about culinary history, for example, from those books?
Well, not only do we understand these trends, but we certainly come to understand this changing demographic and even who the cooks are who are preparing those meals within our kitchens. So not only do we get this wonderful history over time of how people have prepared foods, but we also have just that changing landscape of who's actually in the kitchen, what sort of ingredients we have available. And we do have these books, too, that also cross into not only recipe collections and cookbooks in a traditional sense, but ones that also speak to that etiquette and household tips and managing one's budget as well. Mm-hmm. Among some of the collections that have had a lot of historic interest have been cookbooks that look at wartime and taking care of one's family when you have to stretch that ration dollar. So that's been a very interesting piece of that history. In addition to the Victory Gardens, there was also this concern or question about being able to put things up. Can we maintain, store, and preserve that food to sustain us through lean days?
As someone who teaches courses in science communication, one of the things that I was always interested in, or always kind of enjoyed of the older cookbooks, was the language and how the writing in the cookbooks has changed considerably over time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's really a lot of fun. I have at home a thermometer that I got because I was watching the Food Channel, and it is an instant thermometer that reads in a second and or less, and it. I think I paid $120 for it, but it's the best one I think I've ever had in my life. It just brings to mind appliances and the things that we use in preparing food that's changed so much over time.
Right. And we do have some delightful cookbooks that actually look at the advent of these different appliances, different equipment. There are some that evoke a fair amount of humor for us when we look at the advent of the microwave oven. And what that meant, and having something like that could prepare food quickly and also conceivably very easily, that could also invite other members of the family into that food preparation. It was no longer than traditionally mom any longer. But hey, dad could prepare a meal. Those teenagers could also turn around a meal. And it made food, the time it took to prepare a meal, that much quicker. And we may debate whether or not this is a preparation style we prefer to use moving forward, but there are some cookbooks that certainly document that.
I'm trying to remember when microwaves first came to be. You don't know off the top of your head, do you? Well, that's all right. I mean, what's the difference? I do remember the first one I ever saw at a friend's home, and I think what we did was put a marshmallow in the to explain how it works, and we all sat there and looked in amazement as this marshmallow, I don't know, it didn't blow up,
right.
Sort of fluffed up or whatever you'd call it. So I guess I'm at least old enough for that. I'm wondering about because the books come mostly from people from here. It sounds like Is there much in the way of regional cuisine emphasized in the collection?
Definitely. It's been a focus of our collection to also collect example titles from around the country as well. So it's not just Midwest regional, but it also does have collections from around the country as well.
And probably the world, too, given
yes.
if you're getting, especially from faculty members who've traveled. Mm-hmm. I should donate a few. I've got some from I've traveled all over the world, and especially the Caribbean. I've had some great cookbooks from the Caribbean.
And we will happily accept them.
Well, and do you see much? I'm thinking back of some of the old recipes that, you know, the first ingredient might have been lard, for example.
Mm-hmm.
The trends in cookery in terms of diet or ingredients, the sort of novelties, you can talk about that a little bit?
Definitely. There are a lot of cookbooks that do look to court particular tastes, and there are those different trends to, at one point, and to me these are personally interesting, the advent of preservation technologies and tin can cookery, or being able to cook from cans. And so that's interesting. There are cookbooks that look at that and how food has been preserved. But then there's different diets now, too. We're moving back into the local, sustainable, whole foods cooking. There's many special diets out there as well. And then there are these novelties that look at cooking with the freely foraged. What you can find by just hiking around the backyard in your neighborhoods. There are cookbooks and special gastronomies that look at cooking with edible insects. There are also certainly the aphrodisiac cooking. And then there's a particular novelty cookbook that many of us on staff have come to know and love, and it's called the Invasive Species Cookbook, and it's conservation through gastronomy. So something that you can do with those zebra mussels, and there are recipes for that as
There's
well.
There's a recipe for zebra mussels?
Yes,
oh my goodness.
Among other invasive species. So there are these unique gastronomies that have captured the imagination.
I like the fact that you mentioned the trend back to local and local foods, because That reminds me that here we have Miriam Groom sitting right here, who is the executive director of the REAP Food Group, and want to talk with Miriam. Thanks so much, by the way, again for coming by. Tell us about REAP.
Yeah, REAP is a nonprofit organization. We've been in the Madison area for a little over 15 years. We know that because we're celebrating our 15th annual Food for Thought Festival this year, and that's how we tend to mark our date. We are an organization that looks at food as through a lens that can really be benefit of the world in all ways. So this cultural and community engagement that Karen's been talking about through the historical lens of these cookbooks is just so fascinating. Where have we been as a culture because of food? Where are we going as a culture because of food or through our food? Food is a lens by which we can think of how we relate to our earth and the environment. It's a lens certainly we know about our physical health and, you know, what our current American diet is doing to that.
Sure.
Food is a lens for that. Food is a lens for how we treat each other and labor issues and poverty and access to food. So when we think of all of those things together, what we choose to eat on our plates, three meals a day, really has a huge impact on everything. So REAP's an organization that thinks about that. We like people to think about where their food's coming from, make their choices in a way that helps create the future that we'd all like to live in.
Absolutely. So you really help connect people to the food that they eat.
We do. And for us, the notion of local and sustainable food is really the key. We're so lucky to have so much access to wonderful farmers markets and this ESA movement, and having that eye to eyeball contact with our farmer and being able to ask those questions about where our food comes from.
Tell us about the Local Food Journal.
The Local Food Journal, we're in our third year with that. Two wonderful authors, Joan Peterson and Therese Allen, put together this idea a few years ago. It is a part calendar and journal, a part cookbook, part just local foods, stories and profiles. This year's themed cookbook, this is the third annual, and this year's cookbook journal is all about cheese. All the cheesemakers of Wisconsin, the different kinds of cheese. There's so much wonderful research and interviews and profiles of cheesemakers in here, and then the recipes. So it's really a must-have.
I can say, I think, without equivalent, we have better cheesemakers and more great cheesemakers in this state than any other state.
Yeah, the cheese is the cheese in
no
the state's
comparison.
Remarkable. Absolutely.
No comparison. Well, I tell you what, we have callers online to visit with you, and I want to give them a chance to join in, too. Talking today with Miriam Groons, who is the executive director of the REAP Food Group, and Karen Dunn, who is the information services librarian at Steenbach Library at UW-Madison, talking with them about the cookbook collection at Steenbach Library. But there are also a couple of events that you can participate in starting tomorrow and again on Saturday that are really going to be a lot of fun. We've been doing things like this for a while and know how to do it, the REAP folks. And I hope you'll stay with us and learn more about them. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Well, we all try to save a buck when we can, but sometimes a deal means not getting what we bargained for. And with travel, a cheap ticket can make us pay in comfort and convenience. Rick Sini, CEO of FareCompare.com, has some great advice to share, not only about planning the best air vacations, but also about making sure you are a smart traveler. And he'll be joining us about 11:45 today. Right now, we're talking about cookbooks and a couple of great events that are happening this weekend, actually starting tomorrow, with our two guests, Miriam Groons, who is executive director of REAP, a food group, and Karen Dunn from the Steenbach Library at UW-Madison. Join us with your questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Catherine in Verona, thank you for calling. Hi.
Well, hi, Larry and Karen. Have you heard about the Kitchen Clatter Cookbook? Is that in your collection? Do you have any idea?
Well, I could certainly run a search for it if you'd like me to. I would be delighted to confirm that for you. I guess what you could do is contact me at our Steenbach email address.
What was the name of the book again?
Or I'll just stop by and take a look at your cookbook collection. It sounds really wonderful.
Sure.
Can I tell you about my family's publication of that cookbook?
Sure. Give us a little thumbnail sketch here.
Okay, well, my dad's family, all from the tri-state area of southwest Iowa, was really productive and really communicative. His mother's brother was Henry Field from the Henry Field Seed Company, mm-hmm. and his mother started a radio program in the 1920s. There were so many isolated farm community women who needed that radio program and wanted to communicate that they would write back to my grandmother with their recipes and with their questions. And eventually those recipes were all compiled into a wonderful cookbook published by one of the sisters in the family. And it's a really neat cookbook, so I really recommend that you get it for the library if you don't have it. Really a wonderful representation of farm family cooking from the 1920s on. I think the second edition was published somewhere after 1970, but it's a fun one, and it has a lot of recipes that my grandmother would have tested in her kitchen. My grandmother was a paraplegic due to a car crash in 1930, and yet in spite of that, she started this radio program, and she started the publishing company with a magazine where they would publish the recipes and then also the cookbooks, and it's really a wonderful treasure.
Well, Catherine, that sounds wonderful. And I tell you what, you're in Verona. You should be coming tomorrow. Is there an opportunity, Karen, for Catherine to attend your event tomorrow?
Oh, I should hope so. Tomorrow evening, beginning at 5:30 and running until 8 p.m., our Friends of the Libraries has organized for a special public program with a reception at Steenbach Library beginning at 5:30. And then at 7 p.m., our special guest speaker, Tracy Nathans-Kelly, will share her research using community cookbooks to inform her research, finding that original history about communities and often women as well. And that begins, again, 5:30 with the reception at Steenbach Library, and then we will help guide guests to the lecture hall across the street from us for Tracy's presentation.
And she'll be her title is, well, she's the author of Porcupine Meatballs, is that right?
That's the name of her presentation, yes, Porcupine Meatballs.
Finding History in Community Cookbooks.
Yes.
And see, I know about porcupine meatballs because I'm from a Lutheran community, and I've eaten them many a time at potlucks. You may have eaten one too, Catherine, and everyone else listening in today. But that's going to be a lot of fun. Actually, there's going to be some food, too, isn't there?
Right. We do have several special guests. We do have Chef Kevin Appleton, who will be joining us, as well as members from the REAP Food Group will be with us, the Culinary History Enthusiast, the Wisconsin Local Foods Journal. And let's see, we do have some staff and community members as well from the Greenhouse Residential Learning Community that will be joining us for this particular festival. I guess I could call it a festival in a sense. So there's an opportunity to celebrate and to see the cookbook collections, to do a little sampling, see a demonstration as well from our guest chef, and then be able to enjoy this lecture from Tracy that speaks to just the type of history one can pull from these community cookbooks.
So Catherine and everybody else, I hope you have a chance to come in and see this. 5:30 to 6:50 is the reception, and then the presentation from 7 to 8 o'clock. Well, that's going to be a lot of fun. That's going to be a lot of fun. Thank you, Catherine, for calling. Appreciate your call. By the way, there's a link on my Facebook page to that event. So just go to the Larry Mueller Show if you need to find out. You'll have directions on how to get to Steenbach Library on the UW-Madison campus. The cool thing is that there's a parking lot, 36... let's see, there's 26, 34, 40, and 62. So there's a number of parking spots very close by, and the parking is free. So
right, and several of those lots, after 4:30, the parking is free. I've made that distinction on the event page as well. Lot 36 is a gated lot. It's close and convenient, but there is a charge for that parking.
Yeah, there is a charge for that one. We should turn to John and Shano next. John, hi. Thanks for calling.
You're welcome. How are you today?
Great. Appreciate your call. What's on your mind?
Good. Your guest had mentioned eating zebra mussels and other invasive species. As an invasive species coordinator for a county in Wisconsin, I just want to let everybody know that some of the invasive species, like zebra mussels, do bioaccumulate heavy metals, petrochemicals, bacteria, and other compounds that aren't the nicest things to ingest. So when you are eating invasive species as a local board, to proceed with caution. Just don't want everybody to poison themselves, so to speak.
Oh, right. No, and John, I certainly agree. It happens to be one of those novelty cookbooks that's evoked a fair amount of attention and commentary. And granted, I would certainly agree one would need to exercise some caution, but one may just want to, at least out of curiosity, consult those recipes and see what it actually suggests, or maybe it exists as that novelty.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling, John. Appreciate it. Carolyn in Fitchburg, your turn. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Well, I had such fun over the past couple of years. I wrote a small book and published it 2 years ago. It's called Whistling in the Kitchen, and it's based on 50 years of my mother's journals. And in the introduction, I say this is a very different kind of book. Interspersed among the stories and direct quotes from her journals are her recipes. It would be impossible to tell Mother's story without the recipes, as food was such a large part of her story.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. That, Karen, that sounds like something you should have in your collection.
Oh, definitely.
It really sounds fascinating. Do you have extra copies of that, Carolyn?
Well, I just happened to. I really wrote it for mothers, children, grandchildren, and any children after that. But many people, especially of my generation, I'm in my 60s, enjoy it so much because it reminds them of their mother and the foods that they ate. Yeah. And my background is in holistic nutrition. So along with her recipes, I made up my own recipes, made them a little more healthy, but it's all in the book, and it was just such a delight to do it in memory of my mother.
You're a peach, Carolyn. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. That's really nice, Karen.
It is, and may I make a suggestion, too, particularly with some of these regional cookbooks of interest and ones that have these deep personal connections to communities and to particular individuals, I would highly recommend, too, that you look to see if your local public library, your local libraries, perhaps even the academics as well, akin to us, and or your local historical society. These are the types of materials that many of those individuals, those archivists, those librarians are happy to collect and provide support for as well, and especially if it has a local tie into your area.
And thanks a lot, Carolyn, for calling. Appreciate it very much. John in the town of Dunn, on to you. Hi, thank you for calling. John, are you there? Oh, we lose John? Maybe we lost John. Well, come back. Come back again, John. Let's go to Kathy and Racine. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, Larry. How are you?
Great. Thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
Well, this subject just hits me where I live. When my husband and I got married, we each brought an extensive number of cookbooks to the marriage, and we probably number 350 to 400 now. I've lost track.
Yeah.
And so when we go out, it's like, you really shouldn't be buying another cookbook. I mean, we have everything from, like, my very first cookbook, which I think was a Betty Crocker children's cookbook, to a family one that one of my cousins wrote. But recently we were at an Armenian gathering, an Armenian festival in Racine, and I just couldn't help myself. One of the churches that had things in their gift area or shopping area has published one. I believe it's called Our Mama's Aprons. And I think it's St. Higa, Armenian Church in Racine. And it tells a little bit about the Armenian culture and how the people settled from Armenia in the early 1900s, 1930s. And for each of their mamas, there's a picture of her and her own personal story about how she came to be in Racine and the history of their time in Armenia, and then there's also a recipe or two of each of those mamas, and it's a delightful book to read.
Oh, it sounds great, Karen. Sounds wonderful to me.
It does, and it actually does sound familiar to me, too. So I have a feeling I may have seen this at least at some point. And once again, maybe at some point I need to consult our collection again to see if that one is part of it, actually. Ah,
it sounds great. Wonderful, Kathy.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Thank you for calling. We have more callers online. We have Facebook. Gigi posted a link to a cookbook on my Facebook page. And says, if you're interested in some tried and true recipes, this book is a compilation of recipes collected by members of the Service League of Oshkosh, and all the proceeds benefit women and children in the Oshkosh area. And so she says, Karen, your library should have one. They've published 3 cookbooks over the 90-year history of the organization. Some were contained in the previous editions. Some of the recipes, most are current. So pretty cool. Thank you very much for letting us know and for posting that on my Facebook page. August said on Facebook, Veganomicon, best recipes. Even though we aren't vegan, we use and modify them. Do you either of you know anything about those?
I recognize the title, and it's certainly one I've seen. It's familiar.
Yeah, but it's not ringing a bell with me. Lynn in Lake Forest, Illinois, turn to you next. Hi.
Hi there, Larry. Thank you for taking my call. This is a wonderful show. I'm calling because, among other things, I have some old magazines ago that my ancestors in Wisconsin had, and they... are women's magazines. They go back to, the 1890s and so forth, women, and have recipes. And I think they were, the men's magazine was called The Country Gentleman, the women's, I suppose it would be something like A Country Woman or whatever today, published by Ryman. But I find them very interesting. As well as some magazines from the 20s and 30s, like Better Homes and Gardens, and that's very early stages. I don't know if that also, among other things, has recipes and cooking articles in them. I know they came from Wisconsin because the Harris's and Browns were from Cottage Grove very early on, and the Churchills and Conries were from Sun Prairie. So I know that these come from those families. I have no idea whether, they're of any interest nowadays.
Oh. Well, thanks, Lynn, for calling. And Karen, what about it?
They definitely are of interest. And we do have classes, for instance, at the university where the students do consult these older publications from our periodical collections. And we do, for instance, at Steenbach, have many of what were Build the Women's magazines. We also have many that were oriented to the agricultural community that had publications, or rather, I should say, articles that addressed the entire farm family. And we do have many of those within our collection. But we also have the great fortune with our large academic library system that we have collections that overlap not only with what we might have at Steenbach, but also with the Wisconsin Historical Society collections, Memorial Library, and depending on the scope and the focus of those resources, we may have those well distributed across our campus libraries.
So cool. So if Lynn was interested in donating those, you'd be interested possibly in receiving them.
Possibly, too. We would certainly want her to speak with some of our collections team and staff and determine the best location or make some recommendations or referrals therein.
Thank you, Lynn, for calling. Appreciate your call. And we have, we have lots of callers online, but I want to get back to Miriam a bit because we talked about the event at Steenbach Library, which is tomorrow evening. But there's a big event on Saturday. It's the annual Food for Thought Festival, which I've participated in that in past years, and that is a lot of fun, too. And Miriam, could you tell us about it?
Sure thing. So Saturday morning at 8:30, from 8:30 to 1:30 on Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard, so right next to the farmer's market and before the Badger game, we will be holding our 15th annual Food for Thought Festival. And what's great about Food for Thought is it represents the whole gamut of the things you could be experiencing around food. The culinary history enthusiasts of Wisconsin we'll be back again after the Friday night event to come back on Saturday, so you could explore more of these kind of cultural, historical connections with food, but really people representing the CSA movement and community gardening, the culinary side, food access and food pantries. Really, the whole gamut of exhibitors will be there. We also have food camp, so you can learn do-it-yourself skills, everything from knife skills to figuring out what kinds of chickens you might want to raise in your own backyard. And then Chef Showdown, a really good segment on grazing. People have been hearing about grass-fed dairy versus conventional grain-fed dairy, and we'll have a really good panel about that where people have an opportunity to actually taste what is grass-fed butter taste like compared to grain-fed butter. And then the food tent itself. So it's lunchtime and we're all hungry, so I won't get into it too much. But we have chefs from 10 area restaurants making breakfast and lunch items all day long, all made with local sustainable products. It's just a really fun day.
I know a lot of those chefs, and
yeah,
they're good.
They are good.
They're very, very good at what they do. So that's Saturday morning. Starts at what, 8:30?
8:30. Mm-hmm.
And it really is a lot of fun. It really is a lot of fun. John in the town of Dunn is back here. I think we've got him this time. Hi, John.
Good morning, everybody. I have a question. It has to do with trying to get some good Wisconsin cheese out to my son who lives in Southern California, at least expensive way possible, and not have it go get spoiled on the way and have it last for a while once he gets it. Anybody have any suggestions? He doesn't like Limburger or that kind of stinky cheese, I guess you'd call it, but mm-hmm. he loves other kinds of cheese.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's so funny because we have this California versus Wisconsin happy cows debate, and we all know where the happy cows and the best cheese is from. So good for you for sending Wisconsin cheese to your son. I really can't comment on that too much. I would talk with, you know, the cheese shops that you buy from. They probably have either they do it for you, help pack and send it for you, or would have recommendations. I do have a funny story. My brother lives in Hawaii and owns a little bar, and he discovered that if he made Wisconsin cheese curds for his patrons in Hawaii, they went crazy for it. So he's developed a recipe for frying his own cheese curds and then wrote me in this panic one day to say, it's getting to be summertime and my cheese curd person won't send me except for overnight and it's just too expensive. Can you send me some cheese curds? So I think it's probably easier once the weather gets a little cooler, John, than trying to do it in the heat of summer. But, you know, cheese lasts pretty well. You just got to kind of keep it cold for the couple days it takes to get there.
There are online sources or companies really that are online. Oh, with Paoli Cheese Company, for example, mm-hmm. will send cheeses anywhere. And there are, I should have just not mentioned that one. There are others, sort of with the Wisconsin in the title. If you go online, you're going to find several online places that they're equipped. They know how to do it. They know when to ship. You know, you don't want to, there's certain days that are better to ship than others, depending on the cheese and so forth. So that's another, I think, way to do it. I'd go online and look at some other places that do it professionally.
Yeah.
And Tom in Powers Lake, thanks for calling. Hi.
Good morning. I have Gladys Tabor's 1947 Still Meadow cookbook. And I don't know if anyone else was old enough to remember her or not, but she used to write monthly articles for several of the magazines. And she has some great old-fashioned recipes like cream peas and that type of mm-hmm. cooking. So I thought it was very interesting. It's a great old cookbook and very simple recipes.
Yeah. Karen?
Well, thank you for the recommendation. We'll certainly take a look. I should make a note of the name here as well. Thank you.
Gladys Tabor, T-A-B-O-R, is it? Yeah, T-A-B-O-R. Thank you, Tom, for calling. Nancy in Ridgeland. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry.
Hi.
I'm actually not in Ridgeland anymore, but I'm down here in Madison and working with some local food folks down near the Albany area at Sugar River Dairy, and we're part of the REAP organization, and I just saw Miriam the other night, so hi, Miriam.
Hi, Nancy.
I just wanted to share with you the incredibly wonderful local yogurt that we make, and we, you know, people can take a look at the website, which is sugarriverdairy.com, mm-hmm. and we have yogurt of all different flavors, and we make it in a really, really wonderfully natural way. There are no stabilizers or additives to keep it, as some of the larger companies put in. We have no additives at all. It's just the, you know, the milk and the culture, and everything is incubated right in the cups, just like they're delivered to the stores. And the milk that we get comes in at cow temperature, so
wow.
It's really, really fresh, before it's pasteurized. And then it makes a really nice product because all the cream, it rises to the top naturally in the process. So I just wanted to share that with people, that it's a local yogurt, and it's right here from just south of Madison from our Green County cows, and they do make some of the best. As you were saying, the cheeses from Wisconsin are such high quality, and so is the yogurt.
Nancy, thank you very much. You're not probably not going to get any arguments here. Oh my goodness, we're running a little short of time here, but I want to go back to both events. Karen, first let's go to your event, which is tomorrow night.
Yes.
Tell us about it again.
Yes, our event starts at 5:30, runs until 8 p.m. It begins at Steenbach Library with a reception and an opportunity to take a look at the cookbook collection, do a little bit of browsing of our special displays. It's also an opportunity then to interact with our staff as well and our guests, our special guests for the event from the variety of these local organizations, REAP and CHEW, with Kevin Appleton, and also with Tracy Nathans-Kelly, who is our special guest speaker, who will then at 7 p.m. Speak about her use of the community cookbooks in her research.
Very cool. So that's tomorrow night. And then Saturday, Miriam.
Yeah, 8:30 a.m. till 1:30 p.m. Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard, right off the Capitol Square. Come down, taste some things, learn some things, pick up a Wisconsin Local Food Journal, and then start eating that cheese.
And eat a lot of great, yeah, there's a lot of great food. So it's a wonderful weekend involving cookbooks and food, and what better? Thank you guys so much for coming by and being with us today. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Larry.
Appreciate it very much. Miriam Gruens is the executive director of the REAP Food Group. Karen Dunn is the information services librarian at the Steenbach Library at UW-Madison. There, our guests today. That was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed talking with them. And I'm going to enjoy, I'm sure, talking with our next guest coming up. Rick Cini going to be talking with us about cheap airfares and a whole lot more. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.